You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
They remember November. That's what Frank Broyles always said, and there's a large degree of truth to that. It seems the Razorback football teams that we remember the best are the ones who had strong months of November. Think about 1999. That team was just barely above 500 at one point in November. Then they beat Tennessee and Mississippi State, a couple of top 10, top 15 teams, back-to-back weeks. They beat Texas in the Cotton Bowl. You remember that team very fondly. 2015, the best year that Arkansas's had in the last decade. Again, they lost to Toledo and Texas Tech early that year, but they won five of their last six, including over LSU and Ole Miss, and they won a bowl game over Kansas State. For the 2021 Razorbacks, November is going to determine how we remember them. They play four games against Mississippi State, at LSU, at Alabama, before ending the regular season on Black Friday against Missouri. They come into the month 5-3 overall, 1-3 in the SEC. The feeling here is that there's a good chance they could potentially get to 500 in the SEC by the end of the month, but it's not going to be easy. It begins this weekend with a home game against Mississippi State. Matt Jones, joined by Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports and Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated. And the Razorbacks had a tough month of October. They lost to Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn. They finished the month on a high note, beating UAPB the way you would expect Arkansas to beat a program of that caliber. Clay, as we go into November, how are you feeling about the football team? What do you think the ceiling is for them?
Well, I'm anxious to see them play again. You've had basically 2 weeks to kind of you can take it two ways. You either say get their act together or get healthy. November can make you forget October, and that's really what you want to happen. And I think Coach Broyles, and I heard that so many times, they remember November, but it was, if you go back and you'll look at the schedule, you'd like to forget some of those Octobers. And you played Texas every year in October, and sometimes you played Houston in the more recent times when Houston was really good. And so you'd lose those games, then you'd get to November, and it was doable. And I think that's the same thing. Now, Alabama has just kind of flip-flopped around on the schedule, and that's the bugaboo of this November schedule, is you've got to go to Tuscaloosa, and they'll probably be number two or number three when you go down there. They've got a chance to make some hay in November and finish on a high note and play a bowl game in, December or January.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty big month for Arkansas, and I think for Sam Pittman and his coaching staff too. So I think you would be hard pressed to find an Arkansas fan who's not, pleased with the direction of the program, the way that Sam has kind of turned them around a lot quicker than a lot of people imagine. I was I kind of had the thought that, you would see the program start to take shape really by year three. But I think earlier in the year, or this year, you beat Texas as soundly as you did. You kind of announced that, you're a step or two ahead of where you thought you might be. But this last month is a test for the coaching staff. And I think there are three very winnable games on the schedule too. So I think a lot of people are just looking at the opponents Arkansas has coming up, and they notice that those games are winnable too. Like your game at, against LSU, I think is a little bit more winnable. It's Miles Brennan, one of their quarterbacks. He's reportedly in the transfer portal. So, and then, LSU's dealing with some injuries too, but you got to take it one game at a time. It starts on Saturday. I mean, you can become bowl eligible for the first time in a while, legitimately bowl eligible. So it's a big test this last month. I think if Arkansas goes out and takes care of business, then the trajectory of this program is, it's on the up and up, no doubt.
One of the things that you have to just kind of wonder about is what these teams are that you're playing and where you're getting them. And when the season started, Auburn had a new coach and Brian Harsin, and you know, they struggled at times. And but then when you got to Auburn, they were hitting their stride. And I think almost the same thing for Mississippi State. I know we want to dive deeper into state, but it's not easy to start off with. This is apparently a good Mississippi State team.
Yeah, Mississippi State comes into Fayetteville. They've won two in a row over Vanderbilt, and they beat Kentucky pretty soundly last weekend in Starkville. They lost to Alabama the week before that pretty badly, but they're playing well. And Scotty, the thing that's jumped out to me about Mississippi State is that it seems like every now and then Mike Leach will have a team that can play a little bit of defense, and this might be one of those every now and thens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's so interesting too, because I was trying to get some work done on Monday morning, and I turned on the Mississippi State Kentucky game. It was, you know, rerunning on ESPNU or whatever, and I'm watching the first quarter, and Kentucky is just controlling the whole game. And they've got like a 7-0 lead. I think they end up going up 10-0 maybe early in the second quarter. And I'm like, how is Mississippi State going to turn this thing around? And, you know, their defense is playing well, because I feel like they're getting plenty of rest, which it's crazy, because Mike Leach says he does not give a rip about time of possession, but his team leads the league in time of possession at like 35 minutes. And I think they're sixth in the country as of yesterday when I looked. And so that allows your defense to rest and be, you know, fresher and, you know, meaner. And so it's pretty interesting. I think he's got a pretty good complement for, you know, an offense that, you know, likes to sling it around. You know, they don't like to run the ball a lot, but they did pretty well the other day. You know, a lot of their passes are an extension of the run game, which makes it pretty interesting. But that defense has been pretty rested throughout the course of the year with that time of possession. So they're playing pretty well right now. It's going to be another good test for KJ Jefferson, you know, just to see what all he got done during the bye week.
Clay, I thought Sam Pittman made a great comment. He said that they run the ball by throwing it. And what he meant by that is tunnel screens, little dump offs to the running backs. They throw these really high percentage passes. Will Rogers just set the SEC record last week for best passing percentage in a game. I think he was 36 of 39. You know, they're not a lot of downfield throws, not to say that there's not those, but they run the ball by throwing it out to their running backs.
Yeah. What they do is check it down, and, you know, the tunnel screens are, you know, they sense pressure and that you're going to come after the quarterback. Well, then they throw the tunnel screen, and it's their release for pressure situations. And, you know, it's Arkansas set the tone for what Mississippi State's doing last year with their rush three, drop eight zone system that almost everybody has copied over the last year against Mississippi State. I'm sure Arkansas is going to play a lot of that this week, and you know, it invites the run. You're playing light in the box, you're playing your linebackers 5 yards deep and dropping quickly, and then you're hopeful that those linebackers and your, you know, your safeties and your nickel are going to close down in space and keep it to short gains. And so it puts a lot of pressure on your tackling. And now you have to remember that, you know, one of Arkansas's best tacklers when they played Mississippi State last year was Jalen Catalan, and that he's not going to play this week. Not going to play the rest of the season. So that changes what you have as far as the pressure that you can put on with your sure tacklers. A lot of pressure on those three linebackers to stop the running game, as you say, as an extension of the pass game. And they've got good running backs. They can break tackles. They block well up front. This is a much better offensive unit than what Arkansas saw last year, which was obviously in the early stages of learning what Mike Leach wanted to do. Now we see the full implementation of the air raid, and they don't have to go down the field. But if if you're Arkansas and you pressure, they can go down the field. And they've got the receivers to do that, especially with Polk. And he's typical of, you know, of what Mike Leach has had at wide receiver.
I think there's a little bit of a misconception, too, with some football fans. You know, when they hear air raid, they think that a quarterback's going to be just bombing the ball all over the field, like 20, 25-yard passes. But that's not really what Mississippi State does. I think Bob Holt brought up a good point or a good question to Sam on Monday. You know, their leading receivers, I think they're like all under 10 yards per reception, which is kind of crazy. It's a lot of, as the broadcasters on the Kentucky game mentioned, it's a lot of bunting all the way down the field. I think they used that baseball reference because they honored the baseball national championship baseball team that night, but it is a lot of bunting down the field. And their longest play, I believe, is like less than 45 yards, which is kind of surprising to me. I think what Arkansas has got to do is on first down, you've got to prevent those dump off passes. You've got to prevent those picking up like 7 or 8 yards. And Kentucky gave that up quite a bit. And Mississippi State was ahead of schedule most of the night. And, you know, that gave way to, you know, a pretty big game for them.
Well, just keep in mind that going into the Kentucky game, all three of those receivers averaged over 10 yards a catch. But the point is taken that, you know, it's somewhere in that 9 to 10 range. It is interesting that Mississippi State ranks third nationally in yards after the catch. That's what they do really well, is they get the ball in their hands and they make defenders miss. We talked a little about the defense. I think one of the really good things that Mike Leach has the capability of doing, and we talk about his defenses can play every now and then, is that, you know, sometimes he does a pretty good job of identifying defensive coordinators. You think about Alex Grinch at Oklahoma. He came from Washington State, and Washington State had a pretty good defense the year before he went over to Norman. I think he's done it again, Clay, in Zach Arnett, 35-year-old defensive coordinator. And what Mississippi State is doing really well right now is stopping the run. I think they might be the league's best run defense or one of the top two. Arnett came over from San Diego State, where in 2018 and 2019, San Diego State was the top run defense in the country.
Yeah, I think part of it is that they gave up the pass against some teams. And if you look at who they've played, you know, they haven't played, you know, the top running teams in the SEC. I think Arkansas will run the ball against them, say, better than they did against Auburn on first down. Scotty and I went through those numbers, and I think if you'll look, Arkansas, especially with Dalton Wagner back on that right side at tackle, they'll be able to run the ball a little better than that. Of course, it just depends on how you want to play Arkansas. If you want to load up the box, you know, that's inviting disaster with Treylon Burks and KJ Jefferson and some of the other Arkansas wide receivers. But it's that your point is well made, Matt. They're better defensively than I think some suspected before the season, and their defensive coordinator has got them playing hard and running to the ball, and that's what this game's going to be about. You know, Sam Pittman's already said that's what they emphasize in the off week, is running to the ball and trying to they swarmed the ball against Texas and Texas A&M, and then, you know, against some of those other teams while they were winning those games early. That's what they have to do against Mississippi State, because they're going to dump it into space, and you'll need to get three guys there in a hurry.
Let's look at the rest of the month. We mentioned they go to LSU, they go to Alabama, they have Missouri coming into Fayetteville. LSU feels like a winnable game to me. Doesn't mean they will win. LSU's still got great athletes that they've recruited, including off the heels of that national championship a couple of years ago. But they're in lame duck territory. I mean, everybody knows that Ogeron's gone at the end of the year. You know, what are they playing for at this point? And so that's something that you consider in that game. Alabama looks really good, but they also, like Clay mentioned, I don't know that they look like they're unbeatable like they have in past years. Of course, Texas A&M beat them. Arkansas beat Texas A&M. Doesn't mean that I think Arkansas will beat Alabama, but you do have to take that in consideration. And the Missouri, Scotty, just looks to me like a mess. I mean, it's I think one of the big things that happened in the offseason last year that didn't get a lot of publicity across the SEC was the fact that when Brett Bielema was hired at Illinois, he went and hired Ryan Walters as his defensive coordinator. And Walters was really the last holdover from Barry Odom's time at Missouri. He'd been I think he had even been with Odom back to when Odom was the defensive coordinator at Memphis. This was, real integral part of Barry Odom's coaching staff when he was the head coach at Missouri. They lost him, and Missouri seems to me like they've just kind of lost their identity a little bit, which was a really aggressive, hard-nosed defensive group. You're not seeing that this year.
Yeah, you're really not. And you know that Missouri is struggling when it seems like every Saturday in our group text with me, Matt, Tom, and Bob, everybody's asking Bob what's going on with Missouri, and he's having to tell them that you go to Missouri for an education first and football is secondary. With that, I think it just started with that Boston College game. Like that's not an easy game. It's not a fun trip, and Boston College just wants to beat you up. And that's exactly what Boston College did. And I was pretty surprised the other day when I turned on, for some reason, the Missouri-Vanderbilt game, and Vanderbilt had a second quarter lead, and that game was just competitive at all, because, Vanderbilt is kind of like your get right week for a lot of teams in the league that are struggling. But it was not easy. And it just, you're right. I think it seems like they've lost a little bit of their defensive identity. Don't really know many of those players on that defense. They normally have a guy or two, that stands out, either on the defensive line or like a Nick Bolton at linebacker. Those guys just don't seem to be there. So I think that's a good winnable game, down at the tail end of the schedule. And that's a game that I feel like Arkansas just needs to win a game in that series, to get back on track there in that series.
It's interesting that you mentioned Nick Bolton, because if you go back and you look at the Arkansas game last year, when he got the targeting penalty, Missouri was actually competing pretty well on defense. And when he went out of the game, it was like the floodgates opened. And, we've heard Sam talk about what kind of pressure this Kendall Briles offense puts on the weak side linebacker. Well, that's his spot. That's where he played. And he's an NFL player. Terrific. Great speed, great ability to pressure the quarterback, aggressive tackler. They don't have him. They don't have Trey Williams. They don't have Markell Utsi. And that's kind of the heart of that front seven from last year's defense. And I think losing Nick Bolton, I mean, just imagine, we've seen times when Arkansas, had some injuries at linebacker, and it just changes things. When I've watched Missouri this year, there have been gaping holes for running backs to run through. And I mean, it's like, wow. Now you flip the script. It's hard to tackle Tyler Beatty. I mean, it's just he is a beast. And if he's healthy when Arkansas plays, you may have a high-scoring game. I think that's what you're looking at these four games, is your offense is under pressure to score some points, because these teams have some offensive weapons. Even it seems like LSU has figured out how to run the ball a little bit. Mississippi State definitely can score some points. So the Arkansas defense has to get back on track, has to have a little bit more of a stinger, a little bit more of aggressive flow to the ball. They've got to arrive with more guys and eliminate some busts in the secondary, or you're going to have some high scoring games. And, that might be fun to watch, but defensive pressure, being able to put some pressure on the quarterback has been rare since the A&M game when Trey Williams was really good at that. And is Trey healthy again? I mean, that's the big question. When we watch this game Saturday, is he kind of back to his old self with a couple of weeks off?
Yeah, I think Trey Williams is a big key this last month, because after, Clay, you mentioned that Texas A&M game, he stood out. I mean, he was a star in that game. After that game, leading into the UAPB game, didn't have a single pressure. And so he's got to get back to, creating a little bit of havoc. And I don't think it's really an effort thing with him. It's just that just step off. And Sam has mentioned that in the past, that, you know, they've had presence on the perimeter, just haven't made plays. So I think these last couple of weeks will be good for, you know, getting back on track.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them online at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Whoopee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
Arkansas and Mississippi State will play this weekend. It's kind of fitting that they're going to play, Clay, because just last week, Joe Lee Dunn, who was a defensive coordinator at Arkansas in 1995, helped lead Arkansas to its first division title. And in 1998, led Mississippi State to its only division title. He passed away. One of the really great coaches in college football history, certainly in the SEC, real innovative coach in what he did with the 3-3-5.
Yeah, it was interesting that I got a call early in the week from Jim Washburn, who was the defensive line coach on that with Danny Ford and coached with Joe Lee. And he had talked to his wife, and he wanted me to know that Joe Lee had passed. And he just right off the bat, he said he's the best coach that I worked under, in other words, a defensive coordinator, during my entire coaching career. And of course, Jim, you know, was a fixture in the NFL, I think 18 years, and, you know, veteran, really a good defensive line coach. And he thought Joe Lee was really had a novel approach to defense, and that very seldom did he have anybody in a down stance. They just kind of milled around just before the snap, and then boom, after a snap, they might be in positions or drop into space that you didn't see. You didn't know who was coming on a blitz. That 95 Arkansas defensive team, you know, a lot of credit is given to Barry Lunny and Madre Hill and that offensive line, but what they were doing was making it tough for teams to move the ball. They're getting turnovers. Steve Connolly with, I think, set the school record for sacks. I'm not looking at that number right off the bat, Matt, but you might have it. But it was Joe Lee was really impressive in what he would do in training camp. They called it Packer Days, and it was a series of 40-yard sprints followed by up-downs. And that was kind of the end of the era where players came in and were scattered about during the summer. And they, you know, it wasn't long after that they got summer scholarships and you could keep them in your weight strength program all summer. But I don't believe that was going on at that time in 95. And Joe Lee had, he got him in shape. Let's put it that way.
Steve Connolly had 14 sacks, by the way, in 1995. That tied Wayne Martin's single season school record. He had 23 and a half tackles for loss. I think that might also be a school record that Conley had that year. Joe Lee Dunn's defenses were so much fun to watch. And Clay, you know this, he was such a personality. I mean, the stories are pretty legendary about him, that he would go into the office at 3 o'clock in the morning to start looking at film and scouting the opponents. I found something in after he had passed away that your dad had written, that after they lost to SMU in 1995, they flew back into Fayetteville, got back early in the morning. Everybody else went home. Jolie Dunn went to the office and started going through game film. And by the time the rest of the coaches arrived at 6 a.m., he was already passing out the defensive game plan for South Carolina.
Yeah, he was not in the press box. He'd be on the field, no headset. I don't remember him having a cheat sheet, you know, like a playlist. I'm going to ask Steve Connolly this week. But, yeah, I mean, it was just amazing. And he was a fun guy. He's like a lot of these defensive coordinators, you know, his personality was off the charts. And just an enjoyable guy to be around, enjoyed coaching ball. You know, he's from Columbus, Georgia. You know, he left at 1 year after at Arkansas and went to Mississippi State to get his wife and he a little closer to their parents in Columbus, Georgia. That was his motivation. Starkville on the western part of Mississippi, and it was not a far long drive to home, so to speak. But Danny Ford gets credit for the 95 championship, but I will always think Jolie Dunn and that defense, you know, was a big part of what Arkansas did that season.
Jolie Dunn was 75 years old. He died in his hometown of Columbus. Let's talk about the Razorbacks game against UAPB just for a minute. We haven't had a chance to do that on this podcast. I mentioned at the start, they beat UAPB the way you feel like they should beat UAPB. 45-3 was the final score. They could have hung 70, 80 points on UAPB had they wanted. They pulled all their starters out for the second half, switched to 12-minute clock in the second half. First time I've ever seen that happen in a Razorback game. I mean, it was almost like the college equivalent of a mercy rule in a high school game. Or, you know, if you watch Arkansas UAPB baseball back in April, they called the games off after 6.5 innings. It was like that, Scotty. Seemed like Arkansas did everything that they should have done in that game. They're maybe outside of the backups not moving the ball real efficiently in the second half, you couldn't have asked for a whole lot more.
Yeah, on the second half clock deal, I remember Oliver Grigg made an announcement in the press box that they were going to 12-minute quarters in the second half, and I turned around and looked at him and I laughed, and I was like, are you kidding? And then I was like, he wouldn't have made that announcement to everyone in the press box if it wasn't actually happening. That was pretty strange, but I think it was the right call. I think after the first half, I think everybody was just kind of ready to go home anyway. Traylon Burks was phenomenal. I mean, you score on half of your touches. I mean, that's pretty good. He was pretty good. And I thought KJ Jefferson was a little bit cleaner than he was against Auburn. There were still a couple of throws, you know, particularly I think there were back-to-back slant routes in the end zone that he missed. I think to TJ Hammonds and Tyson Morris, one of them got broken up, but he hit the deep ball. I mean, me and Clay were talking about it when he was, slinging that thing around pretty good down the field. He's got a knack for that, and his numbers would have looked a lot better, you know, if Warren Thompson had been on his game. I think he dropped a couple deep balls and then had a short one slip through his hand. So KJ was good. I think they tried to work Davion Warren the ball a little bit more, because that's a guy that you've got to get going, I think. And he had, you know, a pretty key drop in that Auburn loss. And so if you can find some way to just get him anywhere close to where he was last year, you know, when he had a breakout season, that's going to be pretty big down the stretch, because, you know, Sam was talking on Monday that the receivers have been, you know, fairly inconsistent outside of Traylon. So you got to find some compliments for him. And, you know, I think Warren Thompson had been that until the UAPB game. And so you just hope that his confidence didn't take a huge hit.
It was interesting to watch, and they got exactly what they thought they were going to get from UAPB as far as the defensive look. And they've been zero coverage an awful lot to try to stop the run. And Arkansas has played a lot of teams that have gone with a light box and dared them to run. And this was just the opposite. They brought eight in the front, brought the strong safety to the line of scrimmage, and said, "We're not going to let you run. We're going to see if you can protect your quarterback and throw it around." And Arkansas ran it anyway. I mean, that was obvious that they're like, we're not just going to throw on every play. But really, that's what that look called for. And I think if you multiplied it out and played a whole game with that against KJ with Traylon, might have set some school records. I mean, Traylon might have caught 300 or 400 yards in passes because you had a 5'10 safety on him that just and then the thing that was really amazing is it was late in the first quarter. That guy walked up in press coverage and was taunting Traylon. Traylon just shaking his head. He's like, I don't think you really need to be doing that. And I think they went to him on that next play, didn't they, Scotty?
Yeah, I think so.
It was fun to watch them be able to do that. By the same token, the second offensive line, and let me just say this about offensive lines. The 85 rule has made it where nobody's got a second offensive line. You might have a next best sixth guy that you can play around like Ty Cleary, but nobody has ability to roll out in a game like that another offensive line and be clean. First of all, you don't get to play a lot. And second, there's just not enough talent there with the experience. And so, you know, I kind of felt for Hornsby a little bit. You know, there was people on top of him about the time he took the snap because UAPB continued to bring eight and blitz. So, you know, the people that were disappointed that the second offense couldn't do a little more, I get it. But I didn't – with a second offensive line, I didn't expect to see much. And, you almost would like, okay, let Hornsby play with the first offensive line. But you want to get those guys out of the game. You don't want to get somebody nicked up going into the Mississippi State game. You definitely wanted to play those other guys.
Couple other things was, you know, Dominic Johnson, I think he's just got to continue to get the ball more. And Sam says that, like, anytime you get asked him a question about Dominic Johnson, what his personality is like off the field, and he's going to tell you that he needs more carries. And that's just kind of how it is. Like, he's been really, really productive on the touches that he has gotten. And I thought Arkansas played with pretty good force defensively. I mean, anytime you look up and, you know, you hold your opponent to 1 of 14 on third down and then 0 of 1 on fourth down, that's pretty good work.
A couple of personnel notes before Arkansas plays Mississippi State this week. Dalton Wagner is expected back. He had the finger surgery following, I think it was the Georgia game last month. And Markel Etze, who hasn't played in a few games, he's also expected back. Clay, what do you think those additions do for the team?
Yeah, I think that we probably didn't realize how well Wagner was playing until he was hurt. But I think if you go back to those early games, they were right-handed, which a lot of teams are, because they could run downhill on that side, and he was just collapsing and setting the edge. And that was something we haven't seen Arkansas do in a while, where a tackle was dominant, and then they would flip it back and hit the weak side on the left side with Cunningham. And sometimes they pulled Wagner through those holes I think that's important. And I think Utsi, clearly he was a starter for a reason. He's really good in the run defense. And I think Arkansas missed him. Another thing to add about Wagner is that, he's a leader. I mean, and I think that him and his effectiveness in the huddle is important. And I think that they missed that aspect of his play too, just to the leadership role.
And I was a couple of weeks ago when it was announced that Wagner was out. I did a little bit of digging on, you know, Arkansas's run game when he's been in. They've averaged 6.5 yards per carry between center and right tackle through week five. So those are all games that he started, and they had 13 explosive runs. In that same span, they averaged, you know, close to 5 yards per attempt and 9 explosive runs off right tackle. So he's been really good, you know, in terms of, you know, kind of paving the way on the right end of the run game.
If you enjoy our football podcast, hope you'll check out the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Scotty and I, Dudley Dawson, Andrew Joseph, we have others who help us out with that one as well. We'll begin this week taking a weekly look at Razorback basketball. We'll have a new basketball podcast of Mid-America episode on Wednesday, and that will look back at the North Texas game, the exhibition game that the Razorback basketball team won 68-60 last weekend. You can find that on the same podcast channel where you find this football podcast. Hope you'll visit us at wholehogsports.com. Until then, for the latest Razorback news, including today, big news in Razorback track and field, Lance Harder the longtime Razorback women's track coach, is retiring at the end of 2023. Arkansas has promoted his longtime assistant coach, Chris Johnson, to be the coach in waiting. We'll have plenty more about that today at WholeHogSports.com. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.